So we're back. I'm not doing any special intro for this, but yeah, we're back for part two of Betty and Barney Hill. Just get right into it because they're stupid. So the last we left off, we talked about the star map and all of that. So now we're going to wrap it up. This will be a little bit shorter, but we're going to start with talking about like the public reaction of everything. So the story of Betty and Barney Hill's alleged abduction might have remained a private mystery if not for a series of events that propelled them into the public eye. What began as a confidential report to UFO investigators escalated into a media phenomenon, shaping public perceptions of alien abductions and cementing the Hills as pioneers of modern UFO lore. We're going to delve into the timeline of their story's public exposure, the cultural impact it had, and the varied reactions from media, public, and experts. So when the Hills first reported their encounter to the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, NICAP, in late 1961, they intended to keep the story private. They hoped for answers but feared ridicule. Their detailed six-hour interview with NICAP investigator Walter Webb highlighted their sincerity and confusion. Although UFO enthusiasts and the organization saw the case as a potential breakthrough, the Hills made it clear that they had no desire to attract public attention. Despite their efforts to stay out of the spotlight, the Hills shared their experience with close friends and members of the Unitarian Universalist Church. Over time, their stories began to spread quietly within the UFO research communities, piquing the interest of investigators and enthusiasts. By 1963, they were occasionally invited to speak about their encounter in small, controlled settings.
Okay, so if they didn't want it to be made public, why did they make it public?
Probably because they were naive in thinking that, oh, our church people won't tell the story, blah, blah, blah.
Who opens their mouths and runs the most? Mm-hmm. Runs their mouths the most is church people. Yep. If you want something to get around, go tell somebody in the church.
Especially in a small town like that?
Or especially, not even so much a small town, but just a small church community, like Unitarian. I guarantee you this wasn't very big.
Not church, back then.
Not back then.
Well, even in that area, it wasn't. Depending on where it was. Like, I know it's in Portsmouth, but...
Portsmouth was still a pretty big area, big yeah. Build-up area back then, so...
So, the Hills' attempt to manage the story's narrative ended abruptly in October 1965 when journalist John Luttrell of the Boston Traveler published a front-page article titled UFO Chiller, Did They Seize Couple? The story revealed details from a lecture the Hills had given at a local church, along with information from confidential interviews they had conducted with UFO investigators. Luttrell reportedly gained access to an audio recording of one of their talks, which included key elements of their account.
Again, small church.
Yeah.
Also, again,
why are you recording?
Why are you recording this? Yeah. I mean, they were like, well, talk to this group, we'll record it. I've been like, or not.
Yeah.
I don't want, because... That's physical evidence I can travel around.
My question is, how did they get confidential interviews?
How did Luttrell get access?
Yeah.
Money. Reporters are very good about getting that stuff. Oh, he either handed money around or promised
anonymity for how they got it.
Yeah. So the Traveler story was quickly picked up by the United Press International, UPI, bringing the Hills account to national and even international audiences. What had been a localized curiosity was now a media sensation. Reporters flocked to the Hills and, no pun intended, and their lives were transformed overnight. Betty and Barney Hill were initially unprepared for the media attention. As a modest and private couple, they found the sudden spotlight overwhelming. Barney, in particular, was uncomfortable with the publicity, as he feared it might impact his job and their standing in the community. Remember, he is a postal worker.
So federal.
Yes. And something like this, if he's deemed nuts,
they'll kick him.
They'll kick him, and he won't have a federal job.
And he won't have his pension. He won't have
He'll any also of it. Lose, if he is getting money from the military, he could lose that as well. So, despite their reservations, the Hills chose to cooperate with journalists and researchers, believing it was the best way to ensure their story was told accurately, quote unquote. The Hills consistently maintained that their account was truthful. Betty, who had become deeply involved in UFO research by this point, welcomed the opportunity to share their experience. Barney, though more reserved, also stood by the details of the encounter. Their unified stance and lack of financial motive lent credibility to their story, even as skeptics began to emerge. So keep in mind that while they're not rich, they're not poor either. Well, Barney's making a good amount of money.
Yeah,
They're in a comfortable middle class background. Correct.
So, and they never, up until later, they weren't receiving money for anything, for any of this.
No.
So they weren't doing this for the money. They did not try to do this for the fame. Yes, they got fame. They got money.
Yeah.
A lot of it. But when it started out, this is not what they were doing it for. Now, do I believe that this is all true? No. Do I believe that they think it's true?
Well, I'm sure they thought. If I remember, I believe Betty believed it right up until her dying day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In 1966, author John G. Fuller collaborated with the Hills and Dr. Benjamin Simon to publish The Interrupted Journey, Two Lost Hours Aboard a Flying Saucer. This book, which you can still buy, presented a detailed account of the Hills' encounter, incorporating material from their hypnosis sessions and Simon's professional analysis. The book also included Betty's famous sketch of the star map, which further intrigued readers. So
I do have a star map. If you go to, I think it's under.
No, that's not.
I mean, it's also an interesting look at how, psychoanalysts and psychiatry has actually come a long way between now and then. I mean, nowadays, I don't know what hypnosis is, if it's still used, but from what I understand, it's generally a lot, not as in favor as it used to be.
Yeah. So you can still buy the book. For hardcover, $25, $26. Well, it's not even free on Audible.
What it's about
$7 on Audible?
Is it on Kindle Unlimited?
$10.99, but not unlimited. But John G. Fuller wrote another book called The Ghost of Flight 401. Yes, it's an interesting one. That's probably one we'll do at some point. But there's multiple books about Betty Barney Hill. There's also one called Captured. You can still buy it right on Amazon. But I wouldn't, because it's all fiction. The Interrupted Journey became an instant success, introducing a mainstream audience to the concept of alien abduction. The book's sober and detailed approach helped frame the Hills' story as a legitimate phenomenon, rather than a fantastical tale. By presenting the couple as sincere and relatable, Fuller humanized their experience, making it easier for readers to empathize with their plight. The inclusion of Betty's star map added a layer of intrigue to the narrative. It provided what some saw as tangible evidence of extraterrestrial contact. It became a focal point for both believers and skeptics.
And just looking at the map, it's just a bunch of dots.
Oh, yeah.
Realistically,
I mean, she's not an artist. That is what a star map is.
Yeah. It's just looks like it's randomly placed dots on a piece of paper.
That's probably what she did. In 1975, the Hill story was dramatized in the made-for-TV movie, The UFO Incident, starring James Earl Jones as Barney.
May he rest in peace.
Yes, and Estelle Parsons as Betty.
I don't know who that is, so I can't say much about that.
The film was one of the first serious depictions of alien abduction in mainstream media and brought their story to an even wider audience. The emotional depth of the performances, particularly Jones's portrayal of Barney's fear and trauma, resonated with viewers and added credibility to the narrative. Again, it's James Earl Jones.
So, and this would have been like his early career. So he's really,
which is why it's made for TV.
Yeah, and I wonder if he even remembered that he was in it.
You know what? I'm sure he probably made a concerted effort to forget that he was in it.
Stell Parsons is still alive.
No,
it's 97.
Yeah. James Earl Jones wasn't that much about the same age when he passed away.
Let's see. She's been in quite a few things.
Yeah, this actually would have been a couple years before James Earl Jones voiced Darth Vader in Star Wars.
She's in Roseanne. She's Beverly Harris in Roseanne, if you've ever watched it, and she's also future Roseanne. When they fast forward to her being older.
No.
Oh.
Wait, isn't Estelle Parsons, isn't she the mother, Roseanne's mother in the show?
She is Beverly Harris and Lovely Howell in it. She's also in The Conners, the newer one, as Beverly Harris. But what she, let's see.
I would only know her from Roseanne.
She had big stuff in the 70s. Like, she was Blanche in Bonnie and Clyde.
She was.
She was also in Rachel, which was a big thing.
Yeah, she's the mom, wasn't she?
She's the mom in Roseanne. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah.
So that is her.
So I do know her.
Yeah.
Just didn't know her name.
Yeah. The Hill story became a template for future depictions of alien abductions, influencing everything from The X-Files to Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Great movie.
Yes. And show.
Yeah. X-Files. I love the show.
X-Files.
Oh, X-Files, yes. I thought you said Close. I thought you were talking about Close Encounters. Like
that. Both.
Well, yeah, but Close Encounters was a movie, not a show. X-Files is a great show.
I thought the Close Encounters of the Third Kind was a TV.
Movie. Great movie. One of Steven Spielberg's best, right next to Jaws and Jurassic Park.
Okay, I don't like Jaws and I don't like Jurassic Park, so...
You're missing out.
You won't like Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Got it.
The themes of missing time, medical examinations, and telepathic communication introduced by the Hills became standard in abduction accounts and popular culture. For many, the Hill story was proof of extraterrestrial life. Their credibility as a stable, well-educated couple and the detailed nature of their accounts gave believers a strong case to champion UFO organizations like NICAP and APRA, which is the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, use the Hill story as a cornerstone in their advocacy for government disclosure of UFO phenomena. You don't hear as much from APRA as you do from NICAP. APRA does some stuff, but NICAP is the big one. They are like the big company. Skeptics, however, question every aspect of the case. They pointed to the suggestibility of hypnosis, the potential influence of Betty's dreams, and the possibility of misidentified celestial objects as explanations for the encounter. Jim McDonald's analysis, which attributed the sighting to an aircraft warning beacon, and Carl Sagan's dismissal of the star map as coincidental, fueled the skeptic movement. And let's not dismiss Carl Sagan's background.
Yeah. Also, APRO, it went inactive in 1988. However, after 30 plus years of storage, their case files were transitioned to the National UFO Historical Records Center in Albuquerque. So you can actually still read that what they were up to.
Yeah, which I believe NICAP controls that facility. But yeah, let's not dismiss Carl Sagan's background.
I mean, Carl Sagan
again. We own multiple of his books. The man is well-renowned and a very, very smart man.
Yeah, he was instrumental in the Apollo program. He mentored. He was a doctoral mentor for Neil deGrasse Tyson. And from
one of the greatest.
And yeah. I guess with Dr. Tyson, I remember saw when Dr. Tyson, what was it?
I think it was an interview.
It wasn't just an interview. It was he picked up one of Carl Sagan's actual shows that he did for Popular Science. And he actually talked about Carl Sagan. I guess there was Dr. Tyson was supposed to go home, but a big blizzard hit and he was stuck in Ithaca, New York, where Dr. Sagan was staying. And he just was like, you can come stay with me and my wife at our home.
Yeah, that might have been also on his talk show, Star Talk.
I'm sure he's talking. No, he's talking.
Cosmos, the Space-Time Odyssey,
yeah,
which was a follow-up to Carl Sagan's 1980 series, Cosmos, A Personal Voyage.
Exactly. Yeah, he talked about it, and I was like, oh, that's just nice.
Great, great show. I suggest watching it. It's like 13 parts.
Yes.
Yes.
Really good, talking about venturing into new worlds, tracing our roots back.
I believe very it good. Is on Science Channel, right?
It's everywhere.
I thought it was primarily, because I know Neil deGrasse Tyson, if I remember right, does a Science Channel show.
Right now, you can watch it for free on Tubi, but you can buy it on Prime.
Mm. Honestly, yeah. I might buy it.
But yeah, it's Neil deGrasse Tyson. It was originally on National Geographic.
Okay. I knew that's it was where, on one of the Science Channels. That's where it originally
was. But you could also go buy the physical, like, Blu-ray or DVD. But I suggest watching it because learning anything from Neil deGrasse Tyson, one of the greatest scientists of our age.
And honestly, his books are very good. And you don't have to be extremely smart to understand what he's talking about.
That's why Ben can read them.
Funny enough, we were talking about just before NICAP. NICAP, technically, while it does still exist, is only there as an informational depository. It's not active anymore. From what I've been seeing, a lot of these UFO groups, with the exception of SETI, I think they're all just, they're not active, or they got folded into something else.
Well, yeah, I mean, what do they have to do now that the government admitted it all?
Yeah, we did kind of over.
UAP is still around, which is the unidentified anomalous phenomena. So ARRO, AARO, which is All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, and MUFON is still around, which is Mutual UFO Network. MUFON was the second biggest behind NICAP and is now the one that is still. AARO is new. It was established in 2022.
Probably when they declassified everything.
Yeah, MUFON. So MUFON has representatives in more than 43 countries and all 50 states. They claim to have 4,000 members worldwide.
4,000?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a lot for a UFO community. But yeah, they're the big one. That is, MUFON's the big one that's around right now. But with the government coming out admitting, yes, it's UFOs, blah, blah, blah.
And nobody cares.
What are they going to do now?
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
I remember that. Social media was kind of...
That was like 4 years ago? Something like that?
No, like a year ago.
I feel like it was longer than that.
Yeah.
I think it's just with everything going on, it feels
like... I think it was a couple of years. I think it was at least... I think it was 2021, 2022 that it was released.
I think it was a lot
sooner. Maybe even 2020.
No. Was a lot sooner than that because it was leading up to the election. They just kind of like, yeah, there's aliens, and we're all just kind of like, and we knew that, we knew you were lying about it,
yeah.
And but with everything going on in the world, what are you gonna do about it? What are you gonna do about that? Instead of you just think the aliens would just distract us again? We know they exist. They come every Tuesday. Just come on, guys, up your game. Apparently Russia has a UFO group.
Is that really surprising to you?
A little. Just a little.
Not really.
I think
they'll use them more.
Yeah.
So the Hill story divided public opinion. For some, it was a thrilling confirmation of the possibility of extraterrestrial contact. For others, it was an example of how psychological and cultural factors could create elaborate but ultimately false narratives. Now, the Hill's account introduced many elements that would become staples of alien abduction stories, such as missing time, telepathic communication, medical examinations aboard spacecraft, small humanoid beings with large eyes, later dubbed Greys. Their story influenced countless abduction accounts in the decades that followed, creating a framework for how such encounters were described and understood. After Barney's death in 1969, Betty became a prominent figure in the UFO research. She gave lectures, wrote books, and remained a vocal advocate for the reality of alien contact. While some in the UFO community revered her, Others questioned her increasingly sensational claims, such as seeing fleets of UFOs and taking hundreds of blurry photos. The public reaction to the Hill story marked a turning point in how UFO encounters were perceived. Their experience brought the concept of alien abduction into mainstream consciousness, moving it from the realm of fringe conspiracy theories to a topic of cultural and scientific interest. Whether viewed as credible witnesses or as participants in a psychological phenomenon, Betty and Barney Hill left an indelible mark on the UFO history, forever changing the way we think about life beyond Earth.
And it was in 2021 that the government admitted.
Why do I feel like it was only a couple of years ago?
Because it was a couple of years ago.
It was 4 years ago. It's 2025, people. Mm. Like I said, 4 years ago.
Yeah, so it started in the late 2010s. And then it fully came out in 2021.
Again, unless you're... I wouldn't even surprise me if they lied about that, just as some stupid half-assed attempt to distract us from whatever was going on at the time. Because at that point, it's like, okay, if they're real, where's the evidence? Well, we just told you.
Pictures take me to Area 51.
It's like, pictures didn't happen.
Yeah. Let me into Area 51. Wow. Betty and Barney Hill's account of alien abduction became a cornerstone of UFO lore. It also sparked significant skepticism and alternative interpretations. Critics, researchers, and psychologists sought to explain the Hill's experience through natural, psychological, and cultural lenses, challenging the validity of their claims. This section that we're going to talk about delves into the most prominent skeptical perspectives, from scientific explanations to cultural influences and psychological phenomena. So, one of the most frequently cited explanations for the Hills' experience is the psychological stress they were under at the time. As an interracial couple in the 1960s America, Betty and Barney faced societal pressures and prejudice. Researchers have suggested that the stress may have contributed to heightened anxiety, which could have manifested as vivid dreams, hallucinations, or even shared delusions. Barney, in particular, exhibited signs of stress before and after the encounter. His grueling daily commute of 60 miles and involvement in the civil rights movement added to his mental and physical strain. His subsequent development of ulcers and hypertension further supported the idea that he was grappling with significant internal pressures.
I mean, I can definitely see all those things are could. I guess what I'm trying to say is, this is correct, but it doesn't mean it's the explanation for this. I mean, lots of people, most times people just turn to whiskey, or they have a heart attack or a stroke. I don't know the full medical thing. I've never studied medicine, but I find it very hard to believe that a man who's under this kind of pressure from these factors. Again, alcoholism, heart attack, drugs. Can believe that 100%. I saw aliens and I lost track of time and they did things to me. It's like, stress made you see that? That's kind of weird. Seems a little out of the...
At high stress, people can become delusional. Mm. Another plausible explanation involves sleep-related phenomena such as sleep paralysis or hypnagogic, which is between sleep and wakefulness, hallucinations. These conditions can cause vivid, often frightening sensations of paralysis, bright lights in the presence of other beings. Researchers have argued that such experiences, combined with the Hills' disorientation during their nighttime drive, could explain the bizarre details of their account.
It could have been if they had stopped somewhere to sleep, I could believe this, but they were very adamant that they were driving along the road. The car didn't crash, so it's not like they fell asleep at the wheel.
I've fallen asleep at the wheel without crashing.
Mm.
And woken up a few miles later.
I don't know. Just seems a little...
I've done it.
I'm not saying it's not... I do it every morning. But have you ever seen aliens?
Well, no, because I'm not a psycho like they are. Critics have pointed to the controversial nature of hypnosis as a memory recovery tool. Hypnosis, particularly in the 1960s, was increasingly popular, but also prone to creating false memories. Under hypnosis, subjects are highly suggestible, and leading questions or subtle cues from the hypnotist can shape their recollections. In the Hills case, skeptics have suggested that Dr. Benjamin Simon, despite his professionalism, may have inadvertently influenced their narratives. Betty's vivid dreams about the abduction, which occurred shortly after the encounter, could have provided a framework that both she and Barney internalized under hypnosis.
See, now this I can believe is a much more contribute. I believe this is part of what I think happened to them.
But it can't be the full thing because they claimed stuff happened before they were ever hypnotized.
Which is why I said this is only part of it. I don't think this is the whole thing. You're right. No, because they were telling people before Dr. Simon they saw something, which is, I think, what we will be getting into here.
So some skeptics argue that the Hills' descriptions of the beings and their experience were influenced by popular culture, particularly science fiction. For example, the beings Barney described with large wraparound eyes bear a resemblance to the alien from The Bolero Shield, an episode of The Outer Limits that aired just weeks before Barney's first hypnosis session. Critics like Martin Kottmeyer have pointed out these similarities, suggesting that media exposure shaped their recollections. Similarly, other elements of the Hills account, such as the spacecraft's design and the medical examinations, have parallels in earlier sci-fi films and literature. This raises the possibility that the Hills subconsciously absorbed these ideas and incorporated them into their narrative. And that's what I believe.
I mean, you're right. I mean, it's one of those things, I guess it'd be interesting if Barney had this happened before any of this had happened and described this, I would say, okay, wait a minute. Nobody ever was making drawings or pop culture references to aliens looking like this before he had this. So that might, but no, you're right. I think he probably watched The Outer Limits and that's what he saw.
Betty Hill's interest in UFOs before the encounter also raises questions about the influence of existing beliefs. Her sister had previously reported seeing a flying saucer, and Betty herself had read extensively about UFOs after the encounter. Skeptics suggest that her curiosity about extraterrestrial life may have predisposed her to interpret ambiguous events as evidence of an alien abduction. One of the earliest skeptical explanations came from the Air Force's investigation, which suggested that the Hills might have mistaken the planet Jupiter for a UFO. While this explanation seems overly simplistic, it underscores the potential for misidentification of celestial objects, especially during nighttime drives when fatigue and stress can affect perception.
Okay. I've never seen what Jupiter looks like.
I mean, we would have to kind of look at the alignment of the planets and everything on that exact nights,
yeah,
see how close Jupiter was, because I've seen what Saturn looks like, all of that stuff.
Uranus?
Yes.
I had to, sorry.
But yeah, so you'd really have to look to see what the alignment of the planets was at this time for that to be the case. Could also be that the Air Force was just covering something up.
It could have been,
because that's what they do.
Yep.
Trust me. Jim McDonald, a researcher familiar with the area, proposed that the Hills had likely mistaken an aircraft warning beacon on Cannon Mountain for a UFO. McDonald's analysis reconstructed the Hills' route and pointed out that from certain vantage points, the beacon's red flashing light could appear to hover or move erratically due to the car's motion and the shifting landscape. I think this is the most common.
Yeah.
This is the most likely.
Because they don't really advertise these massive towers now, and in this case now it's cell towers, but again, aircraft warning beacons back then, they didn't advertise where they were. It's dark, you're tired, you're driving, what's that? I don't know what that is. And but I guarantee you, if it had been in the daytime, he would have been like, it's just a tower,
especially with so many air stations around them. And they had numerous Air Force stations, airports, all of that.
And again, they're in the middle of the woods of New Hampshire. You're not really expecting to see these things in the sky.
Skeptics also highlight the role of optical illusions and perceptual errors in UFO sightings. The human brain is wired to seek patterns and meaning, often leading to misinterpretations of light sources or shadows. The Hills' perception of a craft following them could have been a result of their car's movement in relation to stationary, slowly moving objects in the sky. Now, one of the most puzzling pieces of evidence in the Hills case was the shiny circles on their car's trunk, which caused compasses to spin erratically. Skeptics have questioned whether this was truly anomalous or simply a natural property of the car's material reacting to environmental conditions. No definitive scientific tests were conducted to rule out mundane explanations, leaving the phenomenon open to interpretation.
I don't believe this happened. The people who were initially looking into this, they claim to be, you know, well, we're looking for the truth. It's like, then why didn't you document this? Yeah. Other than your word that this happened, we have no evidence it happened. You didn't photograph it. You didn't record it. Now, obviously, they could record it. It's the 1960s. They have cameras, but it's not like they can, not like today where you can use your cell phone.
Yeah.
But again, there doesn't, from what I've seen, they, other than just, oh, yeah, we put a compass next to these weird spots on the car and it went haywire. That's an alien thing. It's like, okay, says you. Could be a million things. Yeah. Where's the car now? Oh, I traded it in.
The pink powder on Betty's torn dress also has been a point of contention. While some labs found unusual chemical changes, no clear link to extraterrestrial activity was established. Skeptics argue that the damage and residue could have been caused by mundane factors such as environmental contamination or fabric degradation rather than an alien encounter.
There's a million reasons why that could be.
It's alien sperm.
That's just nasty.
Pink powder.
That's nasty.
So psychologists have explored the possibility that the Hills experienced a shared delusion, phenomenon in which two people reinforce each other's beliefs and perceptions. In this scenario, Betty's dreams could have served as the foundation for a shared narrative that Barney later adopted, particularly under hypnosis. Mm-hmm. Barney's descriptions of the being's eyes as pressing into his brain and his feelings of helplessness during the encounter have been interpreted by some as manifestations of psychological trauma. His experiences in World War II and the daily stress of racial prejudice may have contributed to these feelings, which were later expressed in the context of the abduction narrative. Again, PTS.
Yeah.
Could very well have been. Again, we don't know what he did in World War II.
Yeah.
We don't know if he even saw anything.
Yeah.
He, for all we know, he could have been admin and sat there and signed some papers.
Yeah.
Paid people. We don't know. But, because those people didn't see shit. So modern psychology recognizes that memory is not a perfect perfect recording of events, but rather a dynamic and reconstructive process. In the Hills case, their fragmented and incomplete recollections may have been filled in subconsciously with elements drawn from their dreams, conversations, and cultural exposure. The nearly 3-year gap between the encounter and the hypnosis sessions raises further questions about the reliability of their memories. During this time, the Hills were exposed to a growing body of UFO literature and media coverage, which could have shaped their perceptions and influenced the details they recalled under hypnosis. So this is a big thing. So when we conduct interviews as law enforcement, we actually conduct them 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
You do an immediate one right after the incident. Then you wait an hour or two and conduct a second interview. And then your third interview is done 24 hours later. The reason being is your first one, you're going to remember certain initial things, but you're not going to remember everything because there's a bit of shock still in there, depending on what happened.
Let your mind process everything.
That's what that hour or two is for. Then that after that hour or two, that shock wears off. You're now remembering some other stuff. And then we can go from there. And then the 24 hours is allowing all of that to convert to long-term memory. So, but 3 years between the encounter and hypnosis is a long time.
I mean, at that point, you're starting to forget things.
Yeah. So, prominent skeptics like Carl Sagan and Robert Schaefer have argued that the Hills story reflects broader societal anxieties rather than extraterrestrial contact. The 1960s were marked by Cold War tensions, rapid technological advancements, and civil rights struggles, all factors that may have influenced the psychological and cultural landscape in which the Hill story emerged. Let's just say this. Barney Hill did this so he didn't have to join the Cold War. He made all this up so he didn't have to. He was like, I'm done. I did World War II. I'm not doing the Cold War.
I mean, at this Fuck point, you. If I remember, at this point, he passed the age of any conscription.
I really, at this point, I believe he's in his 40s. Yeah. So
I really just don't. I've seen everything. I just don't. Everyone always keeps going back to like, oh, the sign of the times are stressing these people out. I'm like, I mean, obviously, yeah, racial prejudice is going to stress these people out. But by this point, I would have figured they have learned to deal with it. Because if I remember correctly, they've been married for quite some time before this. Like 20 happened.
Years.
Exactly. So, I mean, at this point, if they haven't figured out some kind of a coping mechanism, you haven't. What are you doing? But
it's what alcohol is for.
Exactly. So
or cocaine.
Yeah.
Let's not turn to drugs and alcohol to solve problems.
Solve my problems.
I mean, no, drugs are bad, everybody. They're horrible.
For you, yes.
Yeah.
United States Army.
Yeah. Jim Buzzkills.
Don't be surprised if you have to go
next weekend. He gets popped.
That would be hilarious.
That would not be hilarious. That would be charged with a crime.
Next weekend, they're like, hey, we need you to do a drug test. This episode hasn't even aired yet. This episode's not going to air next week.
Oh, I've got my own story. I know the military monitors everything their people are doing. I got my own personal story about that, but we won't get into it now.
So some researchers have explored the symbolic aspects of the Hill story, viewing it as a reflection of their fears and hopes. For instance, the beings described by the Hills with their mix of black and white skin tones have been interpreted as a metaphor for the couple's own interracial relationship and the societal tensions they faced. My biggest thing is the reflections of their fears and hopes. Were they hoping to be unclothed by aliens?
Yeah.
Go down to Florida. You can do that. Yeah. Illegal aliens, but
I think some people are really digging deep for this. It's like, guys, this is not that complicated of how this happened.
Yeah. While skeptics have raised compelling points about the natural, psychological, and cultural influences on the Hill story, they've not definitively disproved it. Instead, their critiques highlight the complexity of the case and the difficulty in separating subjective experiences from objective reality. Whether the Hill's account was the result of extraterrestrial contact, psychological phenomena, or cultural influences, it remains one of the most fascinating and debated UFO cases in history. Now, let's talk about their legacy, or lack thereof. The story of Betty and Barney Hill is more than just a tale of UFOs and alien abduction. It's a cultural touchstone that has left an indelible mark on our understanding of belief, memory, and the possibility of extraterrestrial life. Over 60 years later, their account continues to fascinate, divide, and inspire, raising profound questions about the nature of human perception and our place in the universe. We're going to explore the Hill's enduring legacy and reflect on why their story remains so compelling. Now, the Hill's account was the first widely publicized story of an alien abduction and introduced many elements that, like we said, would become staples of the genre, such as missing time, medical examinations aboard spacecraft or probing, telepathic communications, and grays, these small humanoid beings with large eyes. These became the defining features of abduction narratives in popular culture. So before the Hill story, depictions of aliens varied widely, often resembling humans or monstrous creatures. Their description of beings with large heads, small bodies, and wraparound eyes became the archetype for extraterrestrial beings in modern UFO culture. This image has since appeared in countless films, TV shows, books, and other media. I always think, when I think of aliens, I always think of Marvin the Martian.
Oh, dear.
All right, when I think of aliens, I just go immediately to the X-Files. I think of Marvin the Martian. That's what I grew up with.
The Hill story became a cultural phenomenon, inspiring books, documentaries, and dramatizations such as, again, the 1975 film UFO Incident, starring James Earl Jones and Estelle Parsons. It was one of the first serious cinematic depictions of alien abductions, paving the way for integration of UFO narratives into mainstream media. Elements of the Hill story influenced major science fiction works, like we said, from Close Encounters of the Third Kind to The X-Files. The blending of suspense, mystery, and the unknown resonated with audiences and expanded the boundaries of what science fiction could explore. The Hill story also found its way into music and literature, inspiring works such as Angel Day Augustine's track The Ballad of Betty and Barney Hill. Suggest not listening to that. And the 2023 graphic novel series Blue Book by James Tynion IV. These adaptations highlight the enduring fascination with their narrative across generations. Following Barney's death in 1969, Betty became a prominent figure in the UFO research community. She gave lectures, participated in interviews, and maintained her belief in extraterrestrial contact until her death in 2004. She's been dead for 21 years now. While her initial recounting of the abduction was measured and detailed, her later claims became increasingly sensational, including repeated sightings of UFOs and alleged photographic evidence, which, if you look at them, they're just blurry fucking photos. Looks like she, like, ran her thumb across the screen. They're horrible. Betty's evolving claims divided the UFO community. Some viewed her as a dedicated researcher and a symbol of perseverance, while others saw her later statements as undermining the credibility of their original account. Despite this, her commitment to the subject ensured that the Hill story remained in the public consciousness. The Hill's case had been studied extensively by psychologists and researchers as a case study in memory, belief, and trauma. Their experience provided insights into phenomena such as false memories, how the mind can construct detailed but inaccurate recollections, particularly under hypnosis. Shared delusions, how two people can reinforce each other's beliefs to create a cohesive narrative. And post-traumatic stress. Barney's descriptions of fear and paralysis mirrored symptoms of PTSD, shedding light on how trauma shapes perception. The case also fueled debates about the reliability of hypnosis for uncovering repressed memories. The Hill's experience highlighted how suggestibility and external influences can shape hypnotic recall, sparking further research into the limitations and ethical considerations of the practice. The Hill's account underscores the tension between objective evidence and subjective experience. While physical evidence, such as the car's magnetic spots and Betty's dress, remain inconclusive, their conviction in the story and the emotional depth of their recollections make it difficult to dismiss entirely, unless you're a normal thinking human being. The story continues to divide opinions. Believers cite the Hill's credibility, consistency, and lack of motive for fabricating their story as evidence of its authenticity. Skeptics point to psychological factors, cultural influences, and natural explanations to argue that their account was not based on a real event. This polarization speaks to the broader human desire to reconcile mystery with reason, to find meaning in the unexplained. Now, the Hill story emerged during a time of significant cultural and societal change. The early 1960s saw the dawn of the space age, civil rights movement, and heightened Cold War tensions. These factors created a backdrop of curiosity, fear, and uncertainty that may have shaped how the Hills and public interpreted their experience. Let's be honest. This was just Russia that they saw. So it was Russia invading.
Yeah.
This was an unknown Russia invasion during the Cold War.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
It would have been, Canada would have been closer.
Yeah. Well, the Canucks did it.
Yeah, let's blame them. They're good to blame for everything.
Blame Canada.
For some scholars, the Hill story represents a modern myth, combining ancient themes of supernatural encounters with contemporary anxieties about technology and the unknown. Their narrative continues to resonate because it taps into universal fears and hopes about humanity's place in the cosmos. The Hill story remains one of the most well-documented and influential UFO cases in history. Its elements have been replicated in countless abduction accounts, solidifying it as the foundation of the genre. Despite decades of scrutiny, the Hills case has never been conclusively debunked or confirmed. The absence of definitive evidence keeps the story alive, inviting speculation, reinterpretation, and ongoing debate.
So this is actually a quote from the Hills' granddaughter, who is a UFC fighter.
Oh, really?
Yes. It has always been a part of our family history, Hill tells BBC Sport. It has always been a fact to us. We know something happened, even if it isn't exactly what has been put out there. That is from the Hills' granddaughter.
In other words, grandma and grandpa were kind of fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Well, she would have never met her grandfather.
Or grandma was fucking
nuts. He died in 69.
That's right. It's like, grandma was nuts.
So the Hills' legacy lies not just in their contribution to UFO culture, but in the questions they leave behind. What really happened that night? How do we reconcile subjective experiences with objective reality? And if we are not alone in the universe, what does that mean for humanity? The story of Betty and Barney Hill is as much about the mysteries of the human mind as it is about the mysteries of the cosmos. Whether viewed as genuine encounter or psychological phenomenon, their experience continues to challenge our understanding of truth, memory, and belief. Their legacy endures, reminding us that the search for answers, both within ourselves and beyond the stars, is as infinite as the universe itself.
Yeah. So what do we all think?
I think it's a crock of shit.
Yeah.
I think something happened, but not being abducted by aliens.
I think, and this is just my opinion, somewhere between Montreal and Portsmouth, they were drugged by some
Canucks.
Could have been something.
It's the French Canadians that did it.
Either an early version of MK Ultra, given the fact that there was a lot of military bases around there, or the fact that LSD was becoming a very popular recreational drug. Somebody in between there, they stopped for gas, get some food or whatever, and they decided to be funny or malicious, and they drugged these people. They started flipping out, and they had a bad trip. They woke up, lose time, which is very common in LSD, from what I've understood. I've never taken this drug myself, so I don't know. I do know that it does mess you up for days after you've had it. And then they didn't know what the hell that happened to them, and they just kept trying. Betty was already inclined to believe in UFOs, so she settled on UFOs. Barney just probably was like, yeah, I guess. Probably. That seems logical. I can't explain nearly half of what the fuck happened to us. So they start just telling people, and then it just rolls from there. And then, unfortunately, Dr. Simon, I'm gonna err on the side of caution and assume that he didn't have his own agenda. He just, as a sign of the times, people were just using hypnosis like it was the cure-all for everything. And they just used hypnosis, and he inadvertently influenced them, and they just kind of cemented their beliefs. We were abducted, and these things happened to us. And it just kind of went from there. Because, I mean, however you interpret, a lot of this can be interpreted as also how you believe aliens interact with us. Because some people believe in a more metaphysical aliens, like they only show themselves to people who are more open to the universe, quote unquote, as opposed to those who try to have a more grounded, rational belief in aliens. So a lot of this is going to be interpreted as how you interpret aliens.
Well, listen, you know who got to them? The West End Gang.
The West End Gang.
Yeah.
What's the West End Gang?
So they were a prominent mob in Montreal. They started in Montreal. They're Irish Canadians.
Oh God! So is the Irish now?
Yes. They were known for drug trafficking, contract killing, extortion, racketeering, gambling, gun running, prostitution, money laundering, and bank robberies. So they uh they were high profile bank robbers between the 50s and 70s, mm-hmm. A period when Montreal was known as bank robbery capital of North America. Mm. They controlled the port of Montreal.
Okay.
Oh, fuck.
It was them.
I mean,
they
Betty and Barney Hill saw something that they shouldn't have.
Yeah.
They're again.
It's the West End gang.
Yeah.
That's what I'm claiming.
Okay. You don't.
I mean,
they were also allied with the Catroni crime family in New York.
Catroni? Never heard of those guys.
Huh? And Hell's Angels.
No.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they were. Hell's Angels are actually in Canada, too.
Oh, they're everywhere. They're international.
The Devil's Disciples are the big ones in Canada, though.
I didn't know. I thought Hell's Angels were just stuck in California.
God, no. We have Hell's Angels in Florida. They moved to Florida.
Like, not all of the Hell's Angels chapters are the quote-unquote, you know, was it 1%?
No, they are all 1%ers.
Oh, they are? Okay.
And if you're a Hell's Angel, you're a 1%er.
Yeah.
Hell's Angels are 1%ers. Mm. They have 230 chapters worldwide, 92 chapters in 27 states, and members in 66 countries. If you're part of the Hell's Angels, you're actually considered a terrorist now because they're a gang. And with the new law, gangs are terrorists. They're 1%ers. If you're part of the Hell's Angels, you're a 1%er. And there's so many 1%er motorcycles. If anybody's interested in hearing about those, I know a lot of motorcycle history, and we can do some like Hell's Angels, Iron Order, the Outlaws. I mean, there's so many 1% gangs. Also, go watch Sons of Anarchy. Great show.
Not a fan of it. This is my personal
Hell's Angels.
Sure, I know
it's watched it.
Sons of Anarchy and and the Mayans, which is the follow-up to it, which the Mayans has Robert
Patrick.
Yes, he's in it.
Yeah,
as one of the gang leaders.
Yeah,
because he is a biker. He is one of the chapter presidents of the Booze Riders or something like that, and owns a Harley store.
No,
in California, he's actually there.
Harley was started in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
I believe that.
Fun fact, my grandfather designed their dyno system that they do all their bikes on.
Nice.
That they still use. My grandfather designed that when he worked for Harley.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it started in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Or
one of the first garages was there. Are you checking if I'm right?
No. All right. So, what if your home, your safe haven, became a place of unimaginable terror? A family moves into a Connecticut house, only to discover it was once a funeral home, and something sinister still lingers within its walls. Shadowy figures, whispered voices, violent attacks. Was it a true haunting or something else entirely? Join us next time as we unravel the chilling mystery behind the haunting in Connecticut. Trust me, you won't want to miss this.
Nope.
So, we want to thank you for listening and thank you for visiting the Scarlet Tavern. Please remember to turn in your glasses, push in your seat, and as always, tip the bard. Good night, everybody.
Good night.